Washington. This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. President Trump has agreed to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Pyongyang by May to discuss ending the North's threatening nuclear program. Kim expressed his desire to meet with Mr. Trump through South Korean National Security Advisor Chung Yun-young, who was in Washington to brief U.S. officials on his talks this week in Pyongyang with Kim Jong-un. President Trump has signed proclamations imposing 25% tariffs on steel coming into the country and 10% tariffs on imported aluminum. Amid fears of a trade war, Mr. Trump declared the dumping of steel and aluminum in the United States as, in his words, an assault on our country.
One other thing, some of the countries that we're dealing with are great partners, great military allies, and we're going to be looking at that very strongly. The tariffs don't go effective for at least another 15 days, and we're going to see who's treating us fairly, who's not treating us fairly. Part of that's going to be military. Who's paying the bills? Who's not paying the bills?
President Trump boasted last week that trade wars are good and easy to win. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has reaffirmed the U.S. commitment to Africa 2 months after President Trump's reported derogatory comments about the continent.
We look forward to engaging further with the African Union once that agreement is in place on how this will also promote greater participation of U.S. private sector business interests as well.
Tillerson also promoting peace and security, development and trade, and good governance, part of Washington's approach to Africa. This is VOA News. Syrian military continuing its relentless aerial and ground assault in eastern Ghouta in a campaign to recapture the rebel-held Damascus suburb, forcing the postponement of a critical shipment of humanitarian aid as well. Fighting in eastern Ghouta has escalated in recent weeks as the Syrian government, backed by Russian forces, boost efforts to recapture the area. Violence has killed more than 900 civilians. Rebels have accused the Syrian government troops of using scorched earth tactics and said they're trying to stop further advances by deploying more guerrilla-style ambushes. Britain says that it will methodically work out who carried out a nerve agent attack on a former Russian spy and his daughter, UK's Interior Minister Amber Rudd.
The investigation is moving at pace, and this government will act without hesitation as the facts become clearer. As my right honourable friend, the Foreign Secretary, made clear on Tuesday, we will respond in a robust and appropriate manner once we ascertain who was responsible.
Despite Rudd's call to avoid speculation and allow police to carry out their investigation, several lawmakers in Britain have pointed the finger at Russia. U.S. Environment Program is taking aim, the UN that Environment Program, taking aim at corporations and governments that threaten and intimidate environmental defenders and foul the planet for financial gain. That story now from Lisa Schlein at the UN in Geneva.
Between 2002 and 2013, the United Nations reports 908 people in 35 countries have been killed defending the environment and land. UN Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights Kate Gilmore says all human rights depend on the environment. Yet, she says, people continue to pollute the Earth's resources for short-term economic gain, endangering the lives and livelihoods of future generations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. anthropologist claims that bones found on a remote Pacific island in 1940 were those of legendary lost aviator Amelia Earhart. Writing in the Forensic Anthropology Journal, Richard Jantz said that the evidence is pretty good. Those were her remains. Previous studies of the bones found on an island concluded that they belonged to a man, but the bones have since been lost. But Jantz used new techniques to determine that the bones actually belonged to a woman. Earhart and her navigator disappeared over the Pacific during their attempt to fly around the world in 1937. Get more news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Daily Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, March 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission plans to release its first preliminary results from Wednesday's general election today, Friday, but a local observer group says it has an insight.
From the projections we got in the field from our 506 systematic sampling, we know that a runoff is inevitable and we have the data secured within.
Marcella Samba Cisse is executive director of the National Elections Watch of Sierra Leone. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has met with Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa. We'll have an in-depth analysis of this week's political developments in Zimbabwe, and an international justice conference on Liberia opens today in Oakland, California.
The purpose of the conference is to discuss matters relative to the recommendations of the TRC on a special international criminalized code for Liberia.
Maza Washington is a former member of Liberia Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and forensic scientists meet to focus on identifying the remains of African migrants who died en route to Europe. Those stories from Samson O'Malley's post in our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission says it plans to release the first preliminary results from Wednesday's general election today, Friday, but local radio and television stations have been releasing unconfirmed reports from polling stations across the country. Meanwhile, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS observer team, has called on the Electoral Commission to step up efforts to announce the results. Marcella Samba Cisse is executive director of the National Elections Watch of Sierra Leone. She tells viewers Peter Clotte that based on her organization's projection from 506 sampling, a runoff election is likely because none of the presidential candidates will have enough votes to reach the 55% threshold necessary to be declared the winner.
From the projections we got in the field from our 506 systematic sampling, we know that a runoff is inevitable and we have the data secured within. As if we have said to the public that once the National Electoral Commission releases 25% of the votes, we are also going to put out as many information to the public as possible.
So let me ask you this. Were you comfortable with how the Electoral Commission organized this election, particularly when it comes to the transparency with which they organized this vote?
Well, it might interest you to know that National Elections Watch has unhindered access to all data related to the elections, and so we can vow on behalf of the citizens of Sierra Leone that we'll follow the vote, we'll follow the process to the maximum, and we had sufficient data and information for us to be making those meaningful positions that we've been doing in the last 2 days.
So what assurances are you giving the people of Sierra Leone? You've held a press conference, I saw it. People seem to repose confidence in the information you pass around to them. What assurances are you giving the people of Sierra Leone as they anticipate the release of partial results by the Electoral Commission come Friday?
Sierra Leoneans, I continue to talk to you that we all tried as best as possible to have trust in the Electoral Commission, to have trust in the information that's going about, and more importantly, to have trust in National Elections Watch. We have followed this process right from the start to ensure that we keep to the electoral calendar, to ensure that transitions in Sierra Leone are done democratically. You have seen how we have thrown our weight behind free and fair elections. And trust me, as the chairperson of National Elections Watch, we are giving you consistent and clear information. Whatever we say is something that we have verified in a very credible and pertinent manner. And again, I come back to say, this is a Sierra Leonean process. We are guarding it jealously. We are guarding our democracy jealously, because for us, it's not all about transition. It's not only about changing leadership. It's about consolidating the peace.
Marcella Samba Cisse is executive director of the National Elections Watch of Sierra Leone. She was speaking with viewers Peter Clotte, who is in Freetown covering the Sierra Leone election. An international justice conference on Liberia opens today in Oakland, California. Delegates will discuss how the international community can evoke international laws to establish an international hybrid war crimes court for Liberia. The hybrid court was part of the recommendations in the final report of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the TRC. The conference is being attended by Liberian human rights activists as well as the president of the War Crimes Court in The Hague, Stephen Rapp. Massa Washington is a former member of the TRC. She says she and other human rights activists hope that establishing the War Crimes Court will mark the end to impunity for the atrocities committed in Liberia's civil war.
The purpose of the conference is to discuss matters relative to the recommendations of the TRC on a special international criminalized court for Liberia. At the end of the TRC's tenure, the TRC recommended several recommendations. Amongst those recommendations were addressing the issue of accountability for crimes that had taken place, including war crimes, crimes against humanity, or recruitment of child soldiers, and what have you. And one of those recommendations basically was the recommendations to establish an extraordinary criminal court for Liberia, which will have an internationalized component. But basically, the TRC has recommended hybrid international national war crimes tribunal for Liberia. And we know that since the TRC was ended, there has not been anything done towards implementation of any of those recommendations by the Liberian government, the previous government at the time. So this conference is going to be looking at, one, the recommendations, and two, what can Liberians and the international community do together to actually bring war crimes court to Liberia.
Massa, let me ask you, do you think right now there is the political will in Liberia to do this? Remember, we had 12 years of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Now, do you think the George Weah administration will be willing to do this?
Mr. Weah has not come out publicly as president of Liberia to say that he is not going to implement the TRC report or that holding perpetrators of egregious war crimes or violation or accountable is not going to happen. At this point in time, I think it's a little bit too early. He's establishing his government. He's still appointing administrators who will help him run the country. So I would like for us to give him the benefit of the doubt and let his government settle in, and then hopefully they will begin to address the issue of the TRC and the TRC recommendations. But in the meantime, we are concerned because we see already that some of the negative elements that caused the previous government not to implement the TRC report, we see creeping into this government already. The president, perhaps, you know, unbeknownst to him, made some appointments, and he's making some appointments, and some of these people, you know, have alleged perpetrators in the Liberian war. So when he's making these kinds of appointments and stuff like that, you know, it is concerning for us. But then again, I think it's a little bit too early to make any judgment as to whether this current government is going to support the call for accountability for Liberia or not.
So one purpose of this conference will be to get support for the establishment of an international hybrid court in Liberia or a hybrid court system in Liberia. What would be the purpose of that? Would it be to try people, find them guilty, to do what?
This conference is going to be looking at the possibility, actually, of a war crimes court for Liberia. And we're hoping that this international war crimes court for Liberia, you know, will be the end of impunity for what has happened in Liberia. And we talk about peace and reconciliation, but you can see that not addressing systemically and very deeply the issue of gross human rights violation, the peace that we enjoy, is just going to remain cosmetic.
I asked this question because when you talk to some Liberians, they will say that people should go about their business and forget about what happened.
Of course, you do have some segment of the population that think, you know, the war is over, Liberians will move on. But then you also have a larger segment of the population that is saying, no, hold on, wait a minute. It is, yeah, we do. The war has ended. We have a relative peace. But we also want to address the issue of accountability so that, you know, in the future, people are reminded that they are going to be held responsible for their actions.
Massa, thank you very much. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you, James.
Massa Washington is a former member of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. She was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Philadelphia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Friday, the 9th day of March. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson continues his five-nation Africa visit today, Friday. Yesterday, the top U.S. diplomat met with African Union Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki and reaffirmed U.S. commitment to Africa. Meanwhile, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who is also on a five-nation Africa visit, has ruled out meeting one-on-one with Mr. Tillerson in Addis Ababa today. As Sebastian Mofu reports from Zimbabwe's capital, Mr. Tillerson held talks yesterday in Harare with President Emmerson Mnangagwa.
After meeting Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa and signed economic agreements, the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said he would not meet the U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in Ethiopia. This Friday, both are expected in Addis Ababa, where the African Union is headquartered. Speaking through an interpreter, the Russian top diplomat said Tillerson actually avoided him in January when he was in New York.
There had been no discussion whatsoever about the possibility of our meeting with Secretary Tillerson in Addis Ababa between myself and him. But since they deemed it proper to make such a statement, I'd like to say that it's not true.
The two could have met and probably ironed out their issues. On Thursday, Lavrov said Tillerson was not a, quote, specialist in Chinese Africa, unquote, accusing the American diplomat of lecturing the continent on who to trade with. In an interview, Christopher Mchangwa, the special advisor to Zimbabwe's President Mnangagwa, said his country was not concerned about the bickering of the U.S. and Russian top diplomats. Instead, he comments on their visit to Africa.
It's good for the African continent. We need more capital. We have a very young population which needs to get jobs. We have to stem the migration of young Africans to other countries, to Europe. And the more we can have capital inflows into Africa so that we can modernize our economies, the better. So we like it when the superpowers come in. Obviously, the prerogative of how we treat each superpower is belongs to the Africans. We are competent enough to judge who is our friend, who is not our friend. So we don't like some of the countries coming to lecture Africans on how to treat their relations with third parties. They should leave that to the Africans.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's five-nation tour of Africa started in Ethiopia, then Chad, Djibouti, Kenya and Nigeria. While Lavrov's visit ends in Ethiopia after visiting Mozambique, Ethiopia, Namibia, Angola and Zimbabwe. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A Zimbabwe political analyst says continued infighting among the three vice chairs of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, will most likely weaken the party going into this year's presidential election. Before MDC founder Morgan Tsvangirai died last month, he handpicked Nelson Chamisa, one of the party's three vice presidents, to lead the MDC. But there has been a battle over the leadership of the party, especially between Tokozani Kupe and Chamisa. There was a brawl this past Sunday between Chamisa and Kupe supporters. In another development, former Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe is said to have thrown his support behind the New Patriotic Front Party, which it is believed was formed to challenge President Mnangagwa. Chadrick Guto, the professor emeritus of the University of South Africa, says these developments are the result of the lack of proper succession plan by both Mugabe and Tsvangirai for their respective parties.
the ZANU-PF went through a difficult period of succession because Mugabe was a powerful leader, dictator in many ways, and there was no proper succession plan within the ruling party. The same thing that the opposition party, the dominant one, which is the MDC, also had Morgan Tsvangirai, and he was this powerful leader syndrome. And because of that, there was no proper succession plan. But as he was really about to pass away, he indicated that there would be a successor to take it forward. But that is going to be thought out seriously among those who are the deputies and so on. So I think that it is going to, in my view, weaken the opposition overall and really give ZANU-PF a chance to go forward still as a dominant party, because the opposition will be weaker going towards elections and so on.
Professor, but also within the ruling ZANU-PF party, I read somewhere where someone else has formed a new party called the New Patriotic Front Party. There was an article suggesting that former President Mugabe is supporting that party, which is supposed to be going against Mnangagwa. Did you hear about this new party?
Well, that was natural that Robert Mugabe would engineer from behind the scenes that he should weaken the leadership that took him out, led by Emmerson Mnangagwa. I'm not surprised about that, but it is going to be very difficult, because I think the manner in which Robert Mugabe was removed from power really was a powerful force, where you had the military input. Whatever he supports will not really generate enough support in Zimbabwe at the moment. People want some change.
Professor, you are in South Africa. I thought I might have read an article suggesting that maybe former President Mugabe was visiting or went to South Africa this week. Do you know about that, and what would be the purpose?
I can't confirm that it is true that he's in South Africa, but naturally, if he's about to pass away, he can't just remain Singapore in Asia, where he normally goes. Is of ill health, and I believe that in Africa, South Africa has probably some of the best private medical facilities where it could be really treated.
Shadrack Guto is Professor Emeritus of the University of South Africa. He was speaking with me from Pretoria, South Africa. This week, forensic scientists from around the world have gathered in Dakar for the annual African Society of Forensic Medicine. The theme of this year's conference is the identification of migrants who have died along the migration route to Europe. An expert in this field, Dr. Dinalo De Angelis, spoke with Ricky Shryak about the work he and his colleagues are doing to identify hundreds of bodies from two different shipwrecks in the Mediterranean.
These are two pilot studies, and the meaning is that it is possible to make these kind of identification. I mean, that it is not easy to identify the migrants because of all the standard procedure that are commonly used in forensic practice are not so easy to be used. As I told you before, usually in forensic practice we use clinical data, we use medical data or dental records to perform identification, but in this case it is not easy to achieve this kind of information, basically because they do not have any medical records. And so we ask for the kind of antemortem material that I told you about, and we try to make this kind of identification, and we succeed in at least for the first shipwreck, the one of 2013, we already made some identifications. And for the one of the 2015, the problem is that we are now trying to achieve all the antemortem material with an agreement with the ICRC that is trying to collect the antemortem material for here from Africa. And they are already began to achieve all of this material.
But they're still collecting it right now?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what is the starting point? Is it families say, my relative has disappeared, and I know they took the back way, so it's around this time, and so they come to you, or do you somehow, like somebody has an identification document on them with just their name?
We found, obviously, on the cadavers some identification cards, and this is a starting point to look for the relatives. Then we, for example, for the first shipwreck, the one of 2013, we made some calls all with the aid of some NGOs, for example, ICRC, again, that went around in Europe, in Africa, to try to spread this information. And the information was in Italy, somebody's trying to identify the dead migrant. If you think that one of your relatives was in one of these two ships, boat, please try to give us the antemortem material.
You said it's a pilot study to kind of prove that you can use different kinds of materials than medical materials to identify bodies. Do you hope that these methods can be used then to identify the other migrants?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. We are working on these two shipwrecks, and we want also to show that to the forensic community, to the authorities, to the NGOs, that working in this way, it is possible to identify.
That was Dr. Danilo De Angelis, a medical professor and forensic expert at the University of Milan. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the Athletics Grand Prix Series currently holding in Pretoria, South Africa. Thursday night saw Caster Semenya on another achievement to her ever-growing list of accolades with a new South African record in the women's 1,000 meters in a time of 2 minutes, 35.43 seconds. Ugandan's Halima Nakaye took second in 2 minutes, 37.55 seconds, while Winnie Nyando came third in 2 minutes, 37.98 seconds. Kane Simbini opened his season with a time of 10.05 seconds in the 100 meters. From athletics to tennis news, a comment by American tennis star Serena Williams expressing her desire to launch a top tennis tournament in Africa, particularly in Kenya, has excited Kenyans on Twitter. Williams made a remark during an interview where her opinion was sought on having a tennis event in Africa to help grow the sport on the continent. She confirmed that it was actually something she has been thinking of for a while and will one day in the future realize that dream. In volleyball news, African Women's Club Championship holding in Cairo saw Kenya domination on Thursday. Five-time champions Kenya Prisons thrashed ASEC Mimosa of Cote d'Ivoire 3-0 in what was their second win at the Women's African Club Volleyball Championship in Egypt, to record their second win in Pool D. In another game, Kenya Pipeline saw off Vision Club of Uganda in Pool C to complete a double. In cricket news, captain of South African national cricket team, the Proteas, Faf du Plessis, says it is time for his team to make a bold statement with performances in the second test match against Australia, starting at the St. George's Park later today. Du Plessis says the team will continue with a positive brand of cricket that has been synonymous with his captaincy reign.
It's probably the style of play they believe that they need to play it. So when you play a team like New Zealand, they're the nice guys. They're really friendly, and they don't believe they need to play like that. And they're obviously a team that gets results in the way that they play. Us as a team, very similar. Me as a captain, for me, it's about focusing on what kind of presence you have as a team, what your body language is like, being positive.
In football news, some of Africa's top football executives are throwing their weight behind the Morocco 2026 FIFA World Cup bid for hosting rights. Ghana FA President and first Vice President of the Confederation of African Football, Kwesi Kwesi Nyatake believes it should be the turn of Africa to host the FIFA World Cup in 2026.
There are two bases, Morocco, then the joint one from US, Canada, and Mexico. But we from Africa have not hidden our support for Morocco, and I hope that we support Morocco to win the bid.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, March 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is on a five-nation tour of Africa, and high on his agenda are talks on counterterrorism and advancing mutual ties with nations on the continent. On his first trip to Africa as America's top diplomat, he is expected to meet with leaders from Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. U.S.-Africa relations is the topic on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.